Small world, big data.
I think companies are finally starting to come around. The hackers, you know, ransomware, phishing, they're never going to go away. So you've got to have a mindset as those events get more and more sophisticated.
Hi, Mike Matcha with Small World Big Data, and we are here with Warren Avery, the chief editor, chief curator, and chief newsletter person of the IT Weekly newsletter. Welcome, Warren.
Mike, always a pleasure to talk to you. You can see I'm in my nice fuzzy stuff here. I'm up in Pine Top, 50 degrees. I was down in the valley yesterday, 106. 56 degree difference in one day in 156
miles. Degree difference in Arizona from the top to the bottom. Yep. That is interesting. We're out here in the East Coast, and it's back up this fall to a little bit of the 70s. It's actually kind of pleasant today. You know, I wanted to start off by following up on the question of the week we had last week, which was on bad Alexa. Now, I got a little feedback from a few folks who are really saying they can't really take it anymore, that Alexa pops up at the wrong time. And it's not just Alexa. I shouldn't just pick on the one device. But these listening devices are always on, pop up at the wrong time, start music playing when they don't want to be playing, take commands, and are, you know, sneakily perhaps doing things they don't want to be doing. And when they stop to really think about how many things in their life are now monitoring them, people are starting to get a little freaked out and starting to turn those off. So I wanted to ask you, do you have any of these smart devices in your house, Warren?
No, not a single one. I don't have a doorbell, smart refrigerator. Mike, I'm in that business all the time, and I'm just deathly afraid of that information you're collecting. I'm not having an Alexa doorbell. I don't have anything out there. I have my smartphone, and that's the extent of my technology in my house.
I admit I put up some IP video cameras a few years ago just to take tabs on what's going on outside, but by now they've crufted. Actually, they don't really work. They're up there looking pretty, but none of the technology stayed current enough to work, and I didn't replace it. So yeah, we're pretty in-house IoT free at the moment as well once you get past smartphones. I don't know. I'm thinking about that smart refrigerator, though, because it can keep things in stock inside the refrigerator at some point, they tell us.
Supposedly, they'll call the Whole Foods, and they'll order it for you and deliver it, and then a guy shows up on your front door and says, here's your milk, and you say, I didn't order it. He said, well, it's 3 weeks old, and it's going to curdle. Here's some new milk for you. I don't drink milk anymore, so...
You do have to keep up with that. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, let's take a look at what we've got today. Six articles from the IT Weekly newsletter this week that you hand curated. The first article we have today is, in fact, on implementing some virtual private networking, which, for those of you who don't know what VPN is, virtual private networking, it's a way to make your over-the-web applications safer. You basically create an encrypted tunnel from where you sit to a VPN location, and your web traffic goes out there and then from there out to the internet in a more anonymized fashion. So people can't trace what you're doing by sniffing your network traffic or following it back to where you sit. And if you use a VPN from your location into your company or organization, you basically have a network now that lets you pretend as if you're inside your company or organization for all intents and purposes. So it can be an extender of that security layer. So,
and it's really popular with the road warriors. They're on the road all the time as opposed to using the hotel or the public. They use their company VPN.
So right. I mean, you still use the hotel Wi-Fi and things, but then you turn the VPN on over the top of that, and it makes much more of a secure layer for doing things. And you've got now an article here on choosing the best VPN and some tips for the first-time users. You know, there's a lot of discussion about trying to use free VPNs. Right?
Yes.
So what is this article really advising for people running into VPNs for the first time?
Well, it's an article out of Toolbox by John Youngren, who's the consumer protection specialist for VPN Pro, and it's called Choosing the Best VPN, 5 Tips for First-Time Users. The big thing he pointed out, he says, there's no such thing as a free VPN.
Yeah, there's no free lunch. There's no free VPN.
There's no free VPN.
Nope,
okay,
nope.
And don't choose a free one just because everybody else is doing. And he said, remember, speed comes at a cost. All VPNs are encrypted. And when you encrypt it and de-encrypt it, it slows it down. If you want to go faster, that's going to cost you money. He said, also, don't ever think that VPNs are painless. Make sure when you get a VPN that you get customer support 24/7. And he said, the other thing is a real key is make sure that all of the devices you have, Apple's, Android, whatever it is, they're actually supported. And if the company says, don't worry about it, we're going to make an app for that. No, he says, they're not. And he says, and the other thing is don't get hung up on saving a few dollars. He said, to give you an idea, one VPN is $2 a month with no support. If you get full 24/7 support, it's $2.50 a month. So for $6 a year, you've done away with support. He said, don't buy the cheapest one out there. And he said, the other thing is people are expecting VPN prices are going to be going down. They're not. Sign up for a 2 or 3 year contract and you can get a good deal on it. But he said, a VPN's just take some precautions when you're looking at it, but it's a good deal.
I know I sort of had a moment of epiphany last year, I guess, when I was working a lot in coffee shops when that was still allowed. And I was sitting there doing some fairly sensitive work on my laptop and realizing all that sensitive network traffic, all that email, that's going right through here. Anybody else sitting in this coffee shop could effectively, with a bunch of hacking tools, sniff those packets, see what I'm doing, break into what's going on, or at least know what sites I'm browsing and visiting. And then I just found a couple dollars a month, you could eliminate that.
Exactly.
And I didn't really notice any performance hits. The only time you might get some performance issues is if you have a VPN provider that routes your traffic crazily around the world for their own reasons.
Even then, it's only a millisecond per 1,000 miles. Yeah. So we're not talking a huge amount of time here.
And it's kind of fun, by the way, because if you have a global VPN provider, you can make your laptop look like you're sitting in Brussels or in South Africa or in Japan. So all those sites that track your location now just think you're a globetrotter. You're moving everywhere. Okay, so VPNs, that's what they're for. Get one now. Let's look on to our second article, which is really back to our security threads that we're talking about, really back to our disaster recovery theme that we've been on about this year, totally appropriate for 2020. This article is talking about why it's hard to sell DR to upper management. And I'd ask that question at the same time I'd ask, like, how did they get to be upper management if they didn't understand DR? But maybe that goes hand in hand.
It's a real interesting article out of Disaster Recovery Journal. It's called How to Sell Disaster Recovery to Senior Management. And what they're really talking about is the C-levels and in the board of directors. And I believe the problem is that the CIOs or whoever's talking to them don't know how to tell a story. And at the board level, they are never interested in speed and feeds. They are interested in two things: how to keep the SEC off their back and how to keep the investors off the phone. And I thought there was an interesting observation from an analyst from Forrester. If it's your money that you're laying down, your risk tolerance is very, very low. But on the other hand, if it's the company's money, your risk tolerance goes way up. So anyway, but he made some really good suggestions. Actually, it's Sarah Doherty. And she said, big thing is drop the word disaster. When you go in and you talk to the board about disaster recovery, what do they think about? Earthquakes, hurricanes, the whole building blowing up, they may happen, but they're very low probability. What you want to talk about are the high probability issues. And she says, and the board level, drop the word disaster and start talking about risk mitigation. He said, C-levels understand risk mitigation and talk about those high probability events. For example, if you're in Florida, you want to talk about hurricanes. If you're in, say, California, Oregon, Washington, you want to be talking about fires and earthquakes right now. Also talk about ransomware, malware, phishing. Those are very high probability occurrences. Also, when you're talking to the board, talk about the competitive advantages of having a good disaster recovery, business continuity plan, keeping your customers, your brand reputation, generating more revenue, especially if you're part of a supply chain. You're offline, your whole supply chain goes right down the issue. Understand regulatory and compliance issues in terms of doing that. Meeting your service level agreements. It's a fairly long article, Mike. And there's a discussion about outsourcing that whole DR IT recovery program. So take a look at it and try to get so that you tell a story to the board of directors, not just 8-point PowerPoint, 57 slides. They're not interested. Risk mitigation and keeping your customers. That would be important to the board.
Yeah. And if it's a long article, it's probably too long for senior management to read to start with. So you really have to condense it down too. But I like recasting disaster recovery in terms of risk mitigation. Brings it closer to the financial risk mitigation that most board members are probably more comfortable with. And if you can put it in those terms, you'll probably have more luck getting the resources that you need to do it properly. We've got some keywords today. I actually missed the keywords for VPN, so I'll just go back there and say you can put in VPN and get a lot of articles, or best VPN, one word, and get that other article on VPN. For this article, if you put in disaster recovery, you're going to get a lot of articles. If you put in senior DR, one word, you'll get this one because it's specifically talking about the DR for senior management. We're on the steps here to talking about security again, Warren. We've got another article here lined up on more cyber resiliency, trying to make things harder, I guess, to hack using some sort of techniques to protect people working from home like you and I are doing. So we start with VPNs. We talked a little bit about disaster recovery in the broader sense. Now we've got this third article here. What's this article telling us about cyber resiliency and working from home?
It's an article on a dark reading. It's called Five Steps to Greater Cyber Resiliency. It's by Andrew Rubin, who's the CEO and founder of Illumino. And what he's talking about is that, you know, Mike, we talk about this. It just seems like every week I have two or three articles on security. I don't go looking for these. I'm looking at probably 30 or 40 primary sources, and security is just an ongoing topic every week. So I think companies are finally starting to come around. The hackers, you know, ransomware, phishing, they're never going to go away. So you've got to have a mindset as those events get more and more sophisticated. And he says the big thing is working from home presents a serious security challenge. And he has some good tips for the what we call the WFH, working from home. He said, number one, embrace zero trust. Assume a breach mentality, not if you're going to get hacked or breached, but when. And he says, everything that comes across your network is a risk. Also, adopt a 100% principle of least privilege. Don't give out access to people that don't need it. Make sure you understand it. And he also said, back up your backup. Have another way if something happens that you can get your data back. And he also said, when the first level of defense fails, for example, your peripheral, what's backing that up? And he had a great thing. He says, think about a submarine. When a submarine's under the water, all of those compartments are blocked off from each other. So if one of them does flood, it doesn't get to the other one. Assume somebody's going to get into your company, so keep all those areas separate from each other. And he says, and always, always keep the focus on protecting your mission critical assets. And remember, Mike, it's your data. And if it gets lost or breached or hacked, somebody's head is going to be on the chopping block. So remember, it's your neck on the line. So the goal, you can't be 100% safe 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. But you can take certain steps to make sure you have protective layers in place and backup plan. Again, disaster recovery, business continuity, just a constant focus out there on what's happening in the world.
So this article was Five Steps to Greater Cyber Resiliency. So we're going to call this cyber steps as a keyword if you want to go find it. I do find that the discussion on this goes from zero trust to least privilege to compartmented damage. Really, it's about defense in depth would be a military term we'd use. Yep. And assuming that you no longer have a perimeter to defend, but you have an area in which the bad guys can already be in there moving around in. So how do you implement security everywhere, not just at some artificial perimeter that's probably already been breached, right? I think that's another way to think about some of this.
Yep.
We're going to move on to some security to something a little higher, literally the clouds. We're talking about an article now that you found that's on cloud mapping. And Warren, clouds are foggy. Clouds are nebulous. Clouds don't have a physical presence. So what is cloud mapping?
I looked at this and my question was the same thing. I've never seen that term, cloud mapping. And it's out of NoJetter. It's Chuck Vondra. He's a senior consultant at Communication Strategies. And after reading the article, Mike, it became obvious that cloud mapping is just another term for covering all your bases when you're moving to the cloud. Now, this article has a slight slant towards communications, moving voice over into the cloud. And so you're covering the basics with your data and the apps. You're all familiar with that. But when you're moving voice and collaboration tools, the field gets a little more muddy because it's something new. And he has some good things. When you're actually moving your collaboration tools and your communications over, take a look at some things. He says there's a gotcha there. It's called fees and taxes. You know, when you go buy a car, there's that dock fee that's on there. That's pure profit for the auto guys. He says, and the vendors there, the clouds will put in these fees and taxes, can actually raise your cost by as much as 30%. So get a copy of the invoice. He says, when you're moving your phone number over to the cloud, make sure you know who owns that phone number. Because if you leave and the cloud vendor owns that phone number, you can't take it with you. And you've spent a lot of money with your 800 number. So the contract has to say that you can take that number with you. Also, make sure that when they're moving over, that your 911 calls are going to go through. Some of the cloud vendors don't support that. And there's two things you can read about. It's called Carey's Law and the Ray Baum Act are very, very specific about what happens with these 911 calls. Also, he says, get some sort of a service level agreement. And he says, if you want to see somebody pulling teeth from an alligator, get a service level agreement from a cloud vendor. They will not even touch that with a 40-foot pole, but insist on some sort of a service level agreement with some penalties in there. And also make sure that you pay attention to the auto renewals when the contract ends. Go to a month-to-month basis. When that contract ends, if you have this auto renewal, you're on the hook for another year or something. So have some sort of a notification for the end of contract, 90 days, 60 days. Don't ignore that. And moving to the cloud is not difficult, but you got to do cloud mapping. Make sure all your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed. Get somebody that understands both communications and the clouds.
Yeah, it sounds like this is in the context of folks doing so much cloud transitioning that they're now moving more of their voice and more of their other unified communications also to cloud providers, not just their compute and storage and backup targets and things, right?
So yeah, Zoom is a great idea for a collaboration tool. That's what they're talking about when you're working from home.
Certainly those fees and taxes can get you no matter what field of business you're in, right? You always have to check the fine print on there and the auto renewals as well. Consumer as well as business. Okay. Well, you're going to keep me on security again. We got another article here, but this one's a little bit lighter. This one is about security lessons we can learn from a dog. I don't know how you find this stuff, Warren. Security lessons we can learn from a dog. And even then, I thought you had cats. I thought you had a cat.
I do. But there's a world of difference between cats and dogs. As the old saying goes, dogs have owners, cats have staff. But this guy, Joshua Goldfarb, who's an independent security consultant, they just got a puppy. And he was watching this puppy, and it all of a sudden came to him. There's some important lessons. Crisis management. For a puppy, everything is not a crisis. Don't overreact. And have a consistent plan in place for security issues. When you're teaching your dog, you can't have these plans all over the place. When you're developing security, build it in. He said, for example, if you have a puppy, you cannot leave your shoes around for the puppy to grab a hold on and chew it. You've got to start thinking ahead and build these security plans in. He said, mainly, security is not an afterthought. Security has to be there from the get-go. And he said, reward quality, not quantity. Rewarding a puppy when they do something bad is not good. And he says, and likewise, when you have metrics, you got to have metrics to find out if the trend is getting better or worse. When you have a puppy or a dog, you want to know if the trend is getting better. He's going to have an occasional problem. But overall, is it getting better? Likewise for security, you've got to know. And he says also, have some measurable actions, okay? Don't focus on one specific item. Work the whole security area all over. Then pay attention to your reports. We have the problem in business of writing good reports, and you don't learn anything from good reports. What you learn from is the challenges, the obstacles, the issues. Those are the things you want to put in your report so that you can start to address them. And Mike, I know the puppy was a stretch, but it's a good article and it has some good ideas about how you can build security into your environment. But as far as my cat, she's never going to come around. You call her, she just looks at you and say, I don't think so. You know,
I'm thinking there's some security lessons you can learn from those cats. I'm going to write my own article next week. What you can learn from somebody else's cat.
Yeah.
So the keyword for this article is puppy. Just type in puppy. You'll get the puppy article on security. And our final article today kind of follows up on something we talked about last week. We talked about SecDevOps or security DevOps, or maybe 2 weeks ago, but we talked about the rise of DevOps in another field, which was security. Today, you've got another article of the rise of DevOps in databases. So how is DevOps? I'm going to do a Western theme there. How is DevOps and database coming together there, Warren?
I know exactly what you're talking about there, buddy. Yeah. Anyway, it's out of Network Datapedia, and it's called DevOps Database Strategies and Challenges, Automation, Scalability, and More. And what happens is that up until now, DevOps has been over on one side of the fence. Databases have been over the other. They don't talk back and forth. But we're finding that DevOps is slowly becoming the standard in application development because of its modular and structured format. And so databases, they went off in their own way and did that. But now they're bringing the databases back into the DevOps process. And there's some challenges. The problem is there's not a lot of tools right now for DevOps and database integration. And what tools that do exist, they're not very good at it, but they're going to get better. And also, you got to pay attention to data persistence. When you're moving data into any schema, you have to ensure data integrity. Make sure that data is not going to get corrupted. And he says also size and scalability. DevOps gets better with size. Okay. On the other hand, databases, you get bigger and bigger databases. They get complicated. They get slower. And so you've got to develop some strategies for working together. You get rid of this coupled architectures and also start to think of microservices with individual databases and also start with small changes. Don't just jump off the fence and move everything around. DevOps incorporates incremental changes and frequent reviews. Databases, on the other hand, have these big release dates that they work for. And the other thing is that DevOps is very big on automation. Continuous improvement, continuous development is the cornerstone for any DevOps services using automation. And databases can start to use these automation tools for permissions, rollouts, backups, and upgrades. This is a terrific article on bringing two up until now disparate areas in the company into one with having great benefits. And there's no doubt, Mike, you're going to have to shuffle a little bit. There's going to be some personality. You're going to step on some toes. But in the long run, it's really going to be a benefit to combine DevOps and databases. It's a brand new field out there. The tools are coming, but they're not there yet.
Yeah, putting Agile into database is kind of an interesting idea. It's probably more important nowadays that more and more databases are available as a service. You can go to a cloud vendor, you can build up private clouds and deliver databases on demand or database services on demand so that the use of databases starts to fall more into that Agile DevOps realm. And at the same time, the setting up of a database, the schema, the putting the data into it and the backing it up and protection and integrity of the data is still kind of crawling along in that old school way that ensures integrity, ensures that the data is good, ensures that the data is properly managed and protected for the organization, right? So yeah, there's going to be some tension there, I think. DevOps wants to move fast. The database people want to move a little slower on there. So this is interesting. Interesting in how that comes together. You can find this article under DevOps to get 284 articles. Database gets you 64 articles. You put this one under Dev Data. But I'm wondering if the actual keyword doesn't end up turning up to be like Sec DevOps, something like DB DevOps or database DevOps or something.
You tell me what you want, Mike. I'll go back into it and I'll put it in there. I tried every sort of name, and that's just the one I came up with.
Well, there. I'm just wondering what the actual keyword's going to be in the market or the actual acronym when people start to realize that database administration needs to be more agile and needs to be more DevOps.
It could be Dev DatOps. You know, I'll tell you what, I'll go in and put in Dev DatOps into my database.
I don't know if anybody's going to look it up on that, but okay. So I'm sure next week, Warren, you've teed this up now. I'm looking for another DevOps article on something else. What else is coming in DevOps?
Well, I got a great one next week about the OK Corral. You'll love that one.
All right. Just a little preview there. Now, we finished our six articles of the week. These are all pretty cool articles. You can find them at the itweeklynewsletter.com website. You can get them in the newsletter itself, but you're changing some things up, Warren, here. What's changing right now for the IT Weekly newsletter and how you're delivering it?
The big thing we've decided to do, Mike, is we have a lot of articles. We average somewhere between probably 45 to 60 articles every week. And the newsletter, sending it out by email, got almost unwieldy. And so what we're doing now, we have a thing called the IT Weekly Daily Update, where we're putting in somewhere between 8 to 13 articles a day. And so we have a thing on the IT Weekly newsletter. It's called What's What in the Last 24 Hours. You click on that, and instead of seeing the 17,000 articles we have, you see what's there. They're probably anywhere from 8 to 13 articles over the last 24 hours that you'll be able to take a look at. And we like to think that every morning you come in there, you click on What's What, you'll see what's happening. And these are articles that are usually within the last two or three days, and it'll keep your finger on the pulse of technology that's out there. So it's called the IT Weekly Newsletter daily update. The IT Weekly newsletter, I've had that for 20 years. I'm not going to get rid of it. I know it. It should be the IT Daily. No, because
you know, in a couple of years, it'll be the IT Hourly or something like that.
The
IT Direct Brain Feed.
Yeah.
And, you know, we won't even be reading this. It'll just come right
into our... if you go to the IT Weekly newsletter, you'll see a thing there that says, what's what in the last 24 hours? Click on that. And you're going to see that 8 to 13 articles from the last 20. I don't do it on the weekends, but, you know, I got to take some time off. But that's where it's going right now.
All right. Yeah, technology time off. Which brings us to our question of the week. This week, I wanted to ask the audience here, inspired by the dogs and cats, Warren, I want to know, what IT lesson has your pet taught you? It doesn't even have to be your pet. What IT lesson has any animal inspired you to learn or to think about? Be cats, dogs, rats, fish, whatever, Warren. Get back to us at smallworldbigdata.com. Under our podcast section, there's a contact form where you can communicate directly with us. You can answer the questions. You can ask us new questions. You can make suggestions or requests for kinds of articles you'd like to hear on the Tech Top 6 here. Be sure to subscribe, by the way, to the Tech Top 6. It's coming every week. And give us a good rating if you're a member or downloading us through one of those sites like, I don't know, Apple, iHeartRadio, Pandora, wherever you're getting your podcast from, give us a good rating. And again, you can contact us at smallworldbigdata.com if you've got any questions. Other than that, Warren, this has been a great week. Hope you guys stay safe out there in Arizona. Hope the weather balances somewhere to a happy medium for you.
Mike, I am going to have so much fun come December and January when you're out with your 18 feet of snow and you're minus 400 degrees and I'm sitting here with 82 degrees at Christmas time. So we'll talk.
You don't know, Warren, but I'm coming out there if it gets like that. We're visiting. We're just moving the whole production right out there to Arizona.
But Mike, as always, a pleasure talking to you about this stuff out there. It's fun talking to you about this technology. It just changes on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, stay safe and be happy.
All right. Take care, guys. And we'll talk to you next week.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.